So, thank you very much, Sky. Thank you very much, Professor Pulinets and Bruce. Now, I think in terms of what we have been discussing today already, if you view back the discussions in the morning on the political situation, on the war danger, on all the turbulences which the world is going through right now, and if you put this together with what we have heard in this afternoon about the challenges of mankind in the universe and on the challenges of how to further develop the universe, it certainly become clear that we need a completely different mindset for that, which is a creative mindset which really enables us as mankind to solve all these problems. And I think all these presentations were very, very thought-provoking, and I would encourage all of you to continue the discussion about this now in the pause which is following, before we have our classical music evening, which will start at 7:30. And after that music evening, we also will have some time to discuss and be together and, you know, deepen all these concepts. Now, I think we do have time for two questions, which I would like you to come forward with now. But please be short, and then we can have good answers, maybe from more than one panelist here.
Is this on? Okay, I have a twofold question, and it's to all speakers, but I would like to ask you, Mr. Shields and Mr. Pulinets, especially to answer. The first part of the question is something that does not fit precisely concerning the extinction cycles, which are not not directly connected to the 62 million year cycle only of the movement of the solar system above and beneath the plane of the galaxy, and if there has been made by anyone a correlation between that cycle and the other cycle, where every 140 million years the solar system is moving through the arms of the galaxy, which you talked about, especially at our last conference, Mr. Pulinets. So that's the first part of the question, whether that correlation has been done and been thought about more in depth concerning the changes in the biosphere or even the noosphere. And then the second part of the question is that something that you've been bringing up more recently in the weekly discussions with Mr. LaRouche at the basement is somewhat, for me, it was a striking similarity between the build-up of electromagnetic fields above and beneath clouds towards the ionosphere and towards which is especially dense biospheric regions on Earth. And then what has been brought up, the centralization of antimatter between the outer and the inner Schumann or the magnetic fields around the Earth, where you also have certain concentration in special areas. So if you could just go into that shortly.
Yeah, that were already two questions, so...
Oh, sorry.
Okay, according to the first question, there is a correlation between the cycles of ice and heating of our planet and entering of the solar system into the arms of our galactic, because the arms of galactic with more dense concentration of matter, especially dust, reduce the flux of the galactic cosmic rays which reach the solar system. And modulation of the galactic cosmic rays fluxes modulates, as you probably know, the cloud cover of our planet, and so changes the thermal balance of energy of our planet, at which modulates the age of ice and age of heat. So as concerns the position of the solar system connected with the asteroid, I cannot say anything. I only can say that there is correlation with the climate on our planet. And the second question, I didn't understand exactly what you mean about the Schumann resonance and so on, because the behavior of electromagnetic fields inside the ionosphere and inside the atmosphere is completely different, because the ionosphere is conductive media and the radio wave propagation and plasma wave propagation is completely different inside the ionosphere and within the atmosphere. So ionosphere is some kind of the reflective layer which permits to propagate, for example, around the globe, the electromagnetic waves of short wavelengths in few megahertz of wavelengths of frequency. But what you mean in your question, I did not understand carefully.
On that point, I guess there's two. What I think is it's significant to think is, because there's one, we have a lot of discussion on the cycles about the effects of galactic processes and solar system processes on the Earth. But one thing that we end up leaving out, partially because we just don't have that much material except to know it's there, is the effect of the Earth on everything else. You know that certain major electromagnetic phenomena on the Earth appeared as a result of life's development. We saw both with the development of lightning as a phenomenon. Once life moves onto land, you get both the Schumann resonances, the Schumann appearance, and then change. Any change in their frequency is significant, and I'll go through why for a couple of reasons. The change in the frequency is significant for a couple of reasons. One is because of changing the conditions on Earth. And animal life depends on a very specific Schumann resonance for things like the maintaining biological clocks, etc. But what I think is far more interesting that we just don't know yet is that a certain amount of that Schumann resonance leaks out of the atmosphere. So we're acting as a, life is acting as a beacon, developing areas outside of the Earth, signaling things outside of the Earth. It's not clear what or why. The recent thing we showed on the weekly report, though, is that sort of a sensational version of it, is the role of the radio wave-linked radiation produced by lightning in maintaining the gap between the Van Allen belts. So this is able to maintain a certain clear structure. You can maintain structures a good distance from the Earth based on life's behavior. And you add to that the possibility that what Cody had pointed out, that you have life's appearance coinciding with the appearance of the magnetic field on the planet. Now, which is it chicken or the egg? Is it the magnetic field enabling life? Or is maybe the dynamo model of the Earth's magnetic field incorrect? And life is playing a more significant role in even moderating that, which I think is highly likely. So then you suddenly have life as a phenomenon that's the scale of the solar system, and maybe even larger, because you don't know what the leaked Schumann radiation, what effect that's supposed to have.
Okay, Jonathan, the last question.
Well, Mr. Brulinetz, to tackle on the one of the biggest green lies, how would you approach to refute the so-called anthropogenic, the man-made climate change? And maybe, Sky, you could touch on the frontiers of science, which is, could you say a few words on the matter of antimatter So to give you an idea, maybe what my question is, does antimatter have a weight? Like, does it have a mass? And is there a linkage between antimatter and black holes?
I didn't understand the question. What do you mean? Repeat once more, please. Because more explicitly.
Well, the man-made climate change, I would say, it does not exist.
Okay, about the man-made climate change. There is influence of the human being on our climate, but in comparison with the periodic changes of our climate, it is up to date, by my mind, is negligible. All what happens, the major part of changes of climate on our planet is natural origin with some small modulation of influence of human activity.
Now, I'd say on the second part, I mean, there's some specifics. Something happened. Oh, it's a dog. How about somebody was having serious troubles? Sounds like a. Okay. On the second, there's two things. I mean, a couple. On the question of, yes, you can measure the mass of what's called antimatter. We could actually do, actually, people should take up. I said I'd get for people what Ouyang in the basement made a very nice cloud chamber where you could stick radioactive ore in it and you could actually watch the emissions and you could see what you would measure for what allows you to see if there's an electron being emitted, a proton being emitted, for the antimatter, et cetera. There's a lot of that we can play with that would be good background. But on the question of the frontiers, one of the things we're going to want to take out, I mean, that's experimental work. People should do it straightforward. You can, like I said, he built it in the basement. We could build them here. But then what I'd like to take up is Vernadsky's program at the end of his life that was never followed through on. And I've made reference to it in various presentations, and we've discussed it before, his work on the states of space within living matter. But he was thoroughly convinced of something that LaRouche has been taking up recently in a more detailed form, which is that the things that you call matter, space, and time, the supposed fundamental units of physics, are not actually fundamental. That these are always derivative things. In the same way as with Euclid's elements, it's not possible to get a point without first having a line, without first having a plane. Because if you start with a point, you end up with a definition that can't go anywhere. That doesn't make any sense. Something with no length, depth, or breadth. So you can't build it from the bottom up, but you can start from the top down. Vernadsky was very clear that you could do that and would allow you to redefine those fundamental elements of space, time, and matter from the standpoint of living processes. Now, what he has in his notes, though not as much in his published works, goes a step farther. His concept of the noosphere was not simply what happens when human beings get together. He said the noosphere exists before, and the noosphere exists outside of the existence of specific human individuals, that there's something broader there, that getting to the notion that Lin's been developing of mind, which is that you can actually start with mind as something that exists ontologically, and you can derive the properties of physics from that. Now, what I think is beautiful about that is not that we can demonstrate it, but it gives you suddenly all these things that you read as creation stories, creation myths. You realize that they actually were striving for something real, a real principle there. How do you start with mind, with intention, and then develop the physical universe from that. And in particular, looking at Kuza's, looking at unlearned ignorance and on conjectures, you see that you get the, you realize, my God, what he's describing there, this is not, it's not a, not a simply theological question. He's giving you a real ontology there that it tells you how to approach the universe. And not, and it's again, not just for your personal edification, etc. It will, if you take that approach in physics, you will transform what physics is, and you'll get yourself out of the dead ends that occurred at the beginning of the 20th century. Specifically what he lays out there in On Conjectures, it's a refined version of what you hear, the argument that Socrates makes at the end of the Phaedo dialogue, where he critiques Anaxagoras' physics. And if you take seriously what Socrates does in his critique of Anaxagoras' physics, and then you see that that's in a more developed form in the On Conjectures, then you can see in that is a way out of, you'll see the way Lin is discussing antimatter in a much more superior, in a superior way to the way it's discussed from the standpoint of particle physics. But we can pursue that more, but hopefully that gives you an idea of what we can, what we're working with.
Good. So that brings us now to the conclusion of this afternoon panel. And I certainly think that the matter of mind will become more, or will flower more during this evening. Also, tomorrow morning, I just want to point out that we are going to continue the discussion on the matters, on the issue of the frontiers of science, as you can see in the program. Now, let me make just a couple of announcements, and this concerns, first of all, the general schedule. As you see, and as you know, we start with the music evening at 7:30 this evening. And tomorrow morning, for those who are coming back, and I hope, hopefully all of you, the registration tomorrow morning starts at 8 o'clock because we want to start at 9 a.m. sharp, because we have a full half day with many contributions and exciting contributions and hopefully also a lot of discussions. So please be there then in time. Now, the other announcements are now for the musicians. The chorus warm-up starts now downstairs. The soloists and the pianists should please come to the stage here. The orchestra will come together with Sergei across this conference room. And I need a couple of people to help to remove the tables here from the scene. So please come here and help us here to put away these tables. And otherwise, I wish you a good break, take some rest, and get some food, and get new energy for the evening.